Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? Welcome to this hump day edition of WKAR's Current Sports. That's right, it is Wednesday, April 29th, 2020, and I really hope you guys are having a fantastic week so far. Get over the hump, and then two more days until the weekend, right? Well, got a few things I want to get to on today's Current Sports. I am going to start our discussion period on today's show by diving into what the NCAA has done in regards to finally allowing athletes, its athletes, to profit off of their names, likenesses, and images. This is something that is long overdue, in my opinion, and I think the reason why the NCAA is making this move is pretty obvious. They are feeling the pressure due to how a few particular high school athletes have decided to skip the college ranks. I'll explain, all right? So you don't want to miss that conversation, and I will give you the specifics as to what exactly led to this discussion. And, you know, I didn't think that we'd be seeing this that soon. And it looks as though, come next year, this could be implemented for college athletes to be allowed to profit off of their name, images, and likenesses. All right? So we'll get to that in just a moment. Also, later on this hour, I'm going to give you guys details concerning the whole Curtis Blackwell lawsuit against Michigan State University. As many of you know, Curtis Blackwell was a former Michigan State football staffer under former head coach Mark D'Antonio. Blackwell was let go amidst a pretty dark time in Michigan State football history, where players were being accused of sexual assault, and Blackwell reportedly tried to reach out to some of those players to figure out what was going on, and, you know, he was put in handcuffs. Eventually, he was let go, and he believes he was made out to be a scapegoat during that entire time. And he has filed a lawsuit that encompasses the names of Mark D'Antonio, two police detectives, also former Michigan State president Luana Simon, and former Michigan State Athletic Director Mark Hollis. I got an update concerning how Blackwell and his attorneys, feel Blackwell is being treated throughout this process. So I will also bring to you all that story. So it's going to be a very loaded show today. If I have time, as promised earlier this week, I'm going to give you further thoughts on what we saw in episodes 3 and 4 of the Last Dance Chicago Bulls Michael Jordan docuseries from Sunday night, which profiled Jordan's battles against the Chicago Bulls and the Jordan rules. Also, some very intriguing stories centered on a profile on Dennis Rodman, who helped the Bulls win that second three-peat in the 90s, and also a very cool coaching profile of Phil Jackson and his road to eventually becoming the head coach of Michael Jordan and those Bulls. So if I have time, I'll briefly elaborate on that later on this hour. If you would like to be a part of the show, again, you can't call, but you can text us at 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News and leave us a comment there. And you can also tweet us, tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. Okay, let's start with some Michigan State soccer news, as the men's soccer program under head coach Damon Rensing has announced the addition of Vedad Kovac, who is from Marietta, Georgia, at Leicester High School. He now joins the Michigan State men's soccer program, a part of the 2020 recruiting class. Michigan State will welcome now Jacob Cromer from Northville, Michigan, Chase Esho from Rochester, Michigan, Grayson Mercer from Heber City, Utah, Caden Chaban from Hudsonville, Michigan, and Jack Zuge from Ann Arbor, Michigan, to the 2020 roster alongside now Vedad Kovac. The Spartans also added transfers Luis Sala, Luke Morrell, and Brandon DeSimter. So Damon Rensing doing work in the recruiting area there. Welcome to the squad, Vedad Kovac. All right, Michigan State football also added another player to its recruiting class as Kevin Wigington, a 2021 three-star offensive lineman from the Hun School in Princeton, New Jersey, announced his commitment to the Spartans via Twitter earlier this week on Monday afternoon. At 6'5", 290 pounds, Wigington is listed as the number 41st guard and number 1,030th player overall in the 2021 class by 247 Sports. He was previously named a top four of Michigan State, Maryland, Pittsburgh, and Tennessee. He previously named those schools as his top four choices, and now he will be heading to East Lansing. So congratulations there. Again, Mel Tucker and his staff continuing to do work. Okay, as I just mentioned, Michigan State and Curtis Blackwell have not had the best relationship after he was let go by Michigan State University and Mark D'Antonio's staff, and a federal magistrate judge is effectively setting Curtis Blackwell up as the scapegoat for Michigan State University's actions in a new court filing. U.S. Magistrate Judge Sally Behrens in March recommended a district court judge dismiss Blackwell's wrongful termination lawsuit. And in a Friday filing, Blackwell's attorneys called Behrens' order, quote, fatally flawed and illogical, and say that she, quote, has thrown the book at Blackwell and his counsel, seemingly blaming them for the massive amount of negative press and publicity that MSU has received. It goes on to read, again, these are the objections to Behrens' recommendation, and the report further reads, quote, MSU has created their own problems, yet Magistrate Behrens, for reasons unknown, directs her wrath at plaintiff and his counsel. The court should not allow plaintiff to be the scapegoat to MSU's misgivings. Behrens wrote that Blackwell's attorneys, Andrew Patterson and Thomas Warnicki, quote, repeatedly misuse court process to harass MSU and former head football coach Mark D'Antonio making, quote, misleading statements and seeking discovery on issues unrelated to the claim. She recommended that both men be removed from the case and recommended Patterson appear in a disciplinary hearing before Chief U.S. Judge Robert Jonker. The two men admit they made mistakes, but write that none of those issues warrant either the harsh sanctions Behrens recommends or the complete dismissal of the case. So some added drama there in this whole process. I'll have more thoughts on this story later on this hour. All right, continuing here, Michigan wide receiver Tariq Black, who entered the transfer portal in early December, he is transferring to Texas, according to multiple reports. Blackwell announced his decision last night on Twitter. The tweet included a hook 'em horns emoji. Black had 25 catches for 343 yards last season, but was overlooked in offensive coordinator Josh Gattis' scheme, which featured Nico Collins, Ronnie Bell, and Donovan Peoples-Jones. He suffered injuries in his first 2 years at Michigan, a season-ending broken left foot in 2017 and a broken right foot during practice shortly before the season opener in 2018. He returned for the second half of that season. But Tariq Black, former Michigan wide receiver, he will be taking his talents to Texas. All right, and also, as I mentioned, the NCAA took a dramatic step today toward allowing college athletes to earn income for things like product endorsements and social media content when its Board of Governors approved a broad set of recommendations to address an issue that has put college sports leaders under significant political pressure over the last year. With state legislatures across the country passing or looking into laws that would allow for college athletes to profit from their name, image, and likeness, and members of Congress also sounding the alarm on the issue, what the NCAA announced today represents a significant change from prior NC2A policy. This is coming from Ohio State President and Board of Governors Chairman Michael Drake in a release. Quote, allowing promotions and third-party endorsements is uncharted territory. Still, it's unclear whether the NCAA's actions to broaden name, image, and likeness rights will be enough to get lawmakers to back down. That will be known only with time. But this is a huge step in a direction that many doubted would come soon. I'll give you my thoughts on that in just a moment. Stick around. Also, the Detroit City Football Club, better known as Detroit City FC, the spring season was officially canceled this week, but there is hope the team will take the field later this year. The National Independent Soccer Association announced that the men's spring season was canceled due to the coronavirus pandemic, but the league is planning to begin the fall season in August. A potential summer season is also in the works. The full cancellation of the year, suspended play for 30 days on March 12th. Also, the NBA seems to be targeting no earlier than May 8th to allow player workouts at practice facilities, but the league can push back that date, quote, if developments warrant. That's according to a news release on Monday. Now, the league wants to ensure, quote, safe and controlled environments for players to train in states that allow them to do so, and to create a process for identifying safe training options for players located in other states. That's what the news release said. The league also sent two memos to teams on Monday, one memo detailing workout policies for use of team facilities and player travel, and the other memo detailing health requirements and recommendations. And a little bit of those workout policies include, if a facility is available, no more than four players are allowed at that facility. A maximum of one team staffer may provide in-person supervision, and only if requested by the player. Head coaches and first row bench coaches are not permitted to supervise. Player participation is voluntary, and teams cannot request a player's presence. No player may use a facility other than that of his NBA team. This includes health clubs, fitness centers, gym, or college facility. If a player has traveled from his team's market and wants to resume allowed workouts, he must coordinate and consult with his team and should travel by car if within driving distance. Also, the 14-page health memo, which reinforced strict physical distancing, reduced use of shared objects and spaces, rigorous cleaning and disinfection procedures, and the prioritization of measures to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, included in these details. Just to read three of the bullet points here. Players must wear face masks or face coverings when inside the practice facility, except when engaging in physical activity. Any staff member working with a player must wear gloves. Treatment table must be 12 feet apart. So as you see, these measures are very, very detailed and very extensive here. And I also want to pass along to you the news. This is coming from Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is, like the man, the White House Coronavirus Task Force's top public health expert. He said in an interview with the New York Times on Tuesday that some sports might have to skip the rest of their seasons if the conditions remain dangerous. This is what Fauci had to say, quote, "Safety for the players and for the fans trumps everything. If you can't guarantee safety, then unfortunately you're going to have to bite the bullet and say we may have to go without this sport for this season." Fauci reportedly said the key factor in whether or not sports leagues can return to action is how quickly the United States can gain broad access to tests with quick results. That's the key in this whole thing. Can you test with quick results? And last but not least, for those who care about the Detroit Red Wings, the Wings have landed a late bloomer out of Sweden, signing Mathias Brohm to a one-year contract. Mathias finished sixth in scoring in the Swedish Hockey League last season with 43 points in 52 games. The 6-foot, 183-pound forward drew interest from multiple NHL teams, including the Vancouver Canucks and Washington Capitals, for his speed and work ethic. Brohm is considered sound defensively and could be someone who helps kill penalties. That will do it for your current sports quick hit headliners. If you would like to be a part of the show, as I mentioned earlier, you can text us at 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News and leave us a comment there. Or you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. When we come back, we'll talk about the NCAA finally allowing players to profit. Long overdue. We'll be right back. You are listening to the Hump Day edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I trust all of you are doing well. When it comes to our weather out there, it's in the 60s today. Rainy and cloudy throughout the evening, but hey, I'll take the 60s, right? You know, it was so relaxing too, man. I love when it's springtime and it's raining at night and I can just crack a window and listening to the rain at night as I fall asleep, it's really relaxing to me. I don't know. That's just me, though. All right, folks. Happy hump day to you all. It's Wednesday. And I want to start here because this is a very intriguing story. And for me, it has a few layers. And there is one big conversation that is leading to the NCAA finally saying, you know what? Maybe we should push this thing up when it comes to our players profiting off of their names, image, and likeness. And, you know, I saw this being put out there via Twitter late last night, and then I see, you know, I've seen multiple pieces out there put together detailing the specifics. As the NCAA has taken a dramatic step today when it comes to allowing athletes to earn income for things such as product endorsements and social media content. That's when its Board of Governors approved a broad set of recommendations to address the issue that has put college sports leaders under significant pressure politically and from fans alike over the last year to allow players to profit. State legislatures across the country passing or looking into laws that would allow college athletes to profit from their name, image, and likeness. Members of Congress also sounding the alarm on the issue. We've had the conversation here on Current Sports. The NCAA announced today what they have announced today. This is a huge change from prior policy. And it's unclear whether the NCAA's action to broaden name, image, and likeness rights, whether or not it will be enough for lawmakers to kind of like chill a little bit and step down. But this is a big win for college athletes' rights. And it is certainly long overdue. As I have stated numerous times before, we live in America. And to see an organization like the NCAA rack in millions upon millions of dollars based on the product that they put out, which features athletes. Without the athletes, you wouldn't be making the kind of money that you make. And when it comes to the top two sports in college football and college basketball, we watch because we want to see these amazing athletes compete week in and week out. We don't watch because of the execs. We care about the players. And you see all of these commercials when it comes to the game of the week, stating these players' names and putting them out there. And then when you go to games, you know, when I'm in East Lansing going to a Michigan State game, when I look up in the stands and see certain jerseys, see certain jersey numbers, even though they may not have the last name of that said player on the back, we all know when you go to a Michigan State basketball game, when you look up in the stands and you see a fan wearing a Michigan State basketball jersey with the number 5 on it, we all know who you're rooting for. We all know who that is. It's Cash Money, Winston. Cash is Winston. And I really do feel bad for a player like Cassius Winston who won't get the chance to reap the benefits of this new rule because he is a senior and he'll be trying to make his professional basketball dreams come true. there aren't a lot of teams that I believe that, are going to look upon Cassius really high because physically he's not that intimidating. He's not real athletic. He is incredibly smart, and I think he's going to prove a lot of teams wrong out there. But for a player like Cassius Winston, he may be looking at the height of his name profitability in college. As the top college point guard in the nation, he could have been making local car commercials. He could have been racking in money from Michigan State basketball jersey sales. I mean, it's a bit unfortunate for a player like him, but for those that come after him, this is the right thing to do and long overdue. So the process of these recommendations into NCAA legislation, they're going to occur rather rapidly. You know, at first, when this conversation happened, you know, we all know about, you know, California becoming the first state to pass the Fair Pay to Play law this past September. Nancy Skinner, a Berkeley-based state senator, wrote the bill, which says colleges in their state cannot punish an athlete who accepts endorsement money from a third party or hires an agent to try to profit from his or her popularity. More than two dozen other states introduced similar legislation in the wake of California's law, which is set to go into effect in 2023. And that's where I want to stop here, because I thought that this is going to take some years, at least 3 years. But, you know, according to this new report, you know, this new NCAA legislation will occur over the course of 2020 with an expected vote happening at the next NCAA convention in January. So we could see this rule go into effect where you have college athletes out there being allowed to profit off of their image next year. Props to you, NCAA. That's what I'm talking about. This is revolutionary. This is unprecedented. We have not seen this before. You know, and I saw an article. This is coming from USA Today. Excuse me. USA Today, which is kind of like breaking down a scenario here. You know, if an average commercial for a car dealership is worth $50,000, a college athlete being offered $500,000 will potentially raise a red flag. Right? It's breaking down different scenarios here. Quote, how those issues are handled will be watched closely. And some NCAA critics will argue it shouldn't be regulated at all. From the beginning, the NCAA has maintained that it does not want money associated with name, image, and likeness rights to be a proxy for recruiting athletes to a particular school. And that's the other layer here, end quote. That's coming from, again, USA Today. Dan Wolkin giving that example. At the end of the day, for me, there should not be a limit, a monetary limit on how much a college athlete is allowed to make with this new rule being in place. If that said college athlete's name is big enough to where he can profit numerous ways off of a car dealership, off of jersey sales, off of doing a local food endorsement. Who knows? Who cares? If that athlete's name is big enough to where he can rake in $500,000 or more, then that is his American right to do so. There should be no cap on this. And that's what the NCAA has to understand here. We live in these United States of America. You can't put a limit on how much I can make off of my name. If my name sells, then hey, it sells. Is this going to spark some jealousy? Yeah, maybe. That's just reality. But at the end of the day, this is America. This is how the real world works. Simple as that. People at said company or your coworker may be making more than you based on, who knows, overall value to the company, what that employee brings in comparison to you. This is how the real world works. People are going to make more than you in any respective field you're talking about. And then you have the whole conversation of the NCAA going to be closely regulating, you know, how this, you know, affects recruiting. And this is the only thing I'll say. At the end of the day, you already have the world of recruiting being impacted by exposure and name brand when it comes to school, university competition. You are going to get more exposure if you are a college football player who plays at Alabama in comparison to if you were to go and ball for, I don't know, Western Michigan University. That's just how it is. That's already happening. Your exposure is already high. How implementing this new layer now, where you are allowing a college athlete to get paid off of his or her name, how that's going to impact, how this new rule is going to impact that, I don't think it's going to be that significant. The big time players are already going to the big time schools based on exposure and facilities and so on and so forth. That's just how it is. How it impacts competition among top schools in comparison to others, it's already happening. I mean, just look at the college football playoff already in the years that we've seen it. The big time schools are going there consistently. They are nabbing the top recruits consistently, which is leading to consistent success in comparison to other schools in our nation. We're seeing the Bamas, the Clemsons, the Georgias of the college football world consistently in the running to go to the college football playoff. So how is this going to make things that different? And at the end of the day, that shouldn't even be a conversation, to be honest with you. At the end of the day, this is about what is right and what is fair to college athletes. And it is long overdue. I love this. So, you know, again, it looks as though all three divisions of college sports are expected to adopt this new NIL name, image, and likeness rule by January of next year. And it looks as though it would take effect at the start of the 2021-2022 academic year. I love this. Student athletes promoting themselves, using their sport in school. There are some regulations. I'm reading that it would not be allowed. That athlete would not be allowed to, you know, use school logos and trademarks. The Board of Governors also, quote, emphasized that at no point should a university or college pay student athletes for name, image, and likeness activities. So the money can't come from the university itself, because, okay, then you get into a sticky situation here where obviously a big name school is going to have more money to dish out to a player for promoting himself. And if you promote that athlete, whether you use the logo or not and use the school's name or not, you know where that athlete goes to school at. Western Michigan can't dish out more money than Alabama. So at the end of the day, it has to come from somewhere else, not the school, which I totally understand that. But I love this. And the other layer of this, before we hit our final break, the other layer of this is why? Because I know you're probably sitting there listening to this and saying, okay, why now, NCAA? Why has it taken this long to finally allow student athletes to profit here? And for me, you know, it goes to a conversation that I've been having in barbershops for years. Have you guys seen the news 16 hours ago as it pertains to another five-star high school basketball player who has decided to chuck the deuces up to the collegiate ranks and immediately play professionally? I'm talking about Nevada high school senior Dacian Nix, who has decommitted from UCLA and now signed to play in the G League next season. He now joins fellow prep stars Jalen Green and Isaiah Todd, who was a Michigan prospect, and going pro. Props to these young men as well, because they realize that, okay, why do I need to go to a big-time Division I college to play college ball where I won't profit financially, where I can go to the G League, get top-tier basketball instruction that will aid in me making my dream come true of becoming an NBA draft pick? I can get paid immediately, get that kind of tutoring, top-tier tutoring, in comparison to going to some big-time college and, yeah, gaining the college experience. But at the end of the day, my goal is to play professional basketball when I get paid immediately and do that right out of high school. Not seeing the benefits here to going to college other than maybe some more exposure and the overall college experience. But is that worth it? I can make some money right now. This is steadily becoming a trend. Top high school hoop talent passing on college to play professionally in the G League or internationally. You know, going the Ball family route, right? Like LaMelo doing his thing internationally, he's going to become a top draft pick. Many speculate that he's going to become the number one draft pick this year. More and more high school talent making this a thing. I think the NCAA's hand was forced. They're already getting pressure politically from lawmakers. And now you add this additional layer where you're losing out on some big names who drive your March Madness product. Once you start taking money out of those at the next level of the NCAA, that's when they start looking at things a bit different. The power is always in the hands of the player. And I'm glad you're waking up the NCAA and forcing them to do what's right. thoughts, comments, concerns, 517-355-9527. That is the number that you can text if you want to be a part of the show. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News and weigh in that way. And you can tweet us, tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. When we come back, I will address the latest happenings in the Curtis Blackwell lawsuit. When will this thing end? We'll be right back. You are listening to the Wednesday Hump Day edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports, and I want to bring the show on home here by, again, just giving you guys the latest when it comes to the Curtis Blackwell lawsuit. Blackwell, the former MSU football staffer, recruiting coordinator under former head coach Mark D'Antonio. He is going after Mark D'Antonio, two Michigan State police detectives, former president Luana Simon, and former MSU athletic director Mark Hollis. And the latest coming from Curtis Blackwell's attorneys, they say that they are being attacked, basically. U.S. Magistrate Judge Sally Behrens in March recommended a district court judge dismiss Blackwell's wrongful termination lawsuit, saying that it was fatally flawed and illogical. And, Blackwell's attorney called Behrens' order fatally flawed and illogical, saying that she has thrown the book at Blackwell and his counsel, seemingly blaming them for the massive amount of negative press and publicity that MSU has received. And they question Magistrate Behrens. And in her report, Behrens accuses Blackwell of filing the case for media attention and using it to bolster his state court case. So Blackwell's attorneys putting out there that they don't agree with what Behrens had to say. And they point also to Behrens saying, quote, Behrens failed to point to any specific information. In fact, much of the information that Blackwell obtained in reference in his various motions was obtained through his own efforts and not through discovery process. That's what Behrens had to say when she basically said that this should be dismissed. So this is the big thing, and you can read the report. I mean, it's everywhere. I'm reading directly from Megan Banta and her piece in the Lansing State Journal. It's just amazing to me that Michigan State University has decided to, again, see this whole thing through, because it has continued to be a negative stain and cloud over Michigan State football and the university as a whole. You know, I said months ago that, you know, I'm surprised that Michigan State is letting this thing proceed, and that we're constantly reading about this story in the newspaper. Why not throw some money at it and let Blackwell go on his merry way so that Michigan State can heal and move on permanently into the next chapter, which is the Mel Tucker era for Michigan State University. But it continues. And now when it comes to this Blackwell lawsuit, it's now up to U.S. District Judge Janet Neff to decide whether or not to accept Barron's recommendation. And regardless of Neff's decision, at least part of the case can still proceed. Barron's did not recommend dismissing Blackwell's wrongful arrest claims against the police officers. So that can still proceed. So regardless of what Janet Neff decides to do in regards to her recommendation that this should be dismissed, Blackwell's lawsuit against Mark D'Antonio, Luana Simon, and Mark Hollis, you still have the case against the officers that can still proceed. It's just continuing to bring negative press on this university and this program, and I just don't understand for the life of me why it's still happening. And then you had to layer in there. It's really gotten to a point where it's ugly. It's ugly to this point now. You know, I go back and I think about the report that came out that had Blackwell saying that Michigan State and Mark D'Antonio fired me because I'm black. And it's just like, come on, man. You know, Mark D'Antonio has employed African-American coaches on his coaching staff. Ron Burton, Harlan Barnett. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I'm not going to sit here and continue to pub Mark D'Antonio and his resume of black coaches that he's hired over the years. We all know. So I'm not really buying that. It looks to me like in that conversation, Blackwell was playing the race card. Now, we could maybe have the conversation as to, you know, Curtis Blackwell being fired. Would that have happened if he wasn't black? I don't know. Maybe had that conversation. I'm not going there, though. You know, I don't have any evidence that Mark D'Antonio rolls that way. I mean, come on. It's gotten really ugly at the end of the day. And when will we move on? We're not going to move on from this story. We can't move on if this story continues to make headlines because it's still ongoing. I don't know about you, but it's really annoying for me anytime I see another Curtis Blackwell headline in the newspaper when it comes to this lawsuit. You know, what's really interesting, though, I will say, is that Blackwell's attorneys did come out and say that, yeah, we made mistakes. They made mistakes. And that's what basically led to Judge Barron saying and you know, recommending that a district court judge dismiss the wrongful termination lawsuit. But seeing this, it's just like, can we move on? Okay, we have a minute left. I guess my Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary thoughts are going to continue to sit out there. Gives you more reason to tune in as we proceed with just two shows left. I tell you, this week is kind of flying by, if you ask me. Just two shows left here in the week, and you know, you'll get my thoughts on how the Last Dance depicted the Detroit Pistons bad boys, specifically Zeke, Isaiah Thomas, because Isaiah Thomas is making headlines everywhere for not only how he was depicted in The Last Dance on Sunday night, but also what he has had to say since that airing of The Last Dance. And also Dr. Anthony Fauci, the leading man on the White House Coronavirus Task Force's top, being the White House Coronavirus Task Force's top public health expert, saying that, yo, sports may not happen for a long time. That and more on the Thursday edition of Current Sports. But until then, have a great Wednesday afternoon and evening. Be safe, be smart, and as always, be easy, people.